will start a warming trend. They'll boost temperatures well above normal through this weekend. Dry weather is expected to persist until a strong cold front moves in from the west late in the weekend. High temperatures will range from the mid-40s in northern Wisconsin to the mid-70s across central Missouri. Low temperatures will range from the mid-30s in northern Wisconsin to the upper 50s across western Missouri. Mostly sunny skies around Champaign-Urbana today, not as cold. The high around 62 degrees. We'll have wind gusts up to 25 miles an hour. Partly cloudy skies tonight, not as cold. The low 48 degrees and winds up to 15 miles an hour. Mostly sunny, breezy tomorrow with a high of 70 degrees. Winds up to 30 miles an hour. Partly cloudy tomorrow night. The low 52 degrees. Partly sunny for Sunday with a morning in the morning with a cloudy with a chance of showers in the afternoon. Breezy, the high 68 degrees. Again, winds up to 25 miles an hour. Rain expected Sunday night and a chance of thunderstorms after midnight. The low 42 degrees. Rain likely Monday morning. Showers are likely in the afternoon. Much colder, the high 42 degrees. And we'll have temperatures dipping down to the low 30s later on in the week. Temperatures around the area right now, we've got 58 in Danville, 60 in Decatur, 53 in Bloomington. At Willard Airport, we have 57 degrees and 57 in Friends Plaza in Urbana.
WILL programming is made possible by Community Concierge Magazine. Every issue includes an event calendar, attractions, and maps, as well as a business and shopping guide. Community Concierge Magazine is distributed throughout East Central Illinois and always presents the CU area at its best.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Jeff Bossert in for Craig Cohen. It's 1242. The just-wrapped-up election season is also a time when county treasurers in Illinois try to recoup unpaid property taxes. Jenna Dooley went to a delinquent property tax auction in northern Illinois and has this report.
02, 15, 22, 231, 011. The dollar amount, $183.14.
Those numbers probably don't make a lot of sense, but to Lee County Treasurer John Fritz, it's how his county stays afloat.
The left hand has to take in all the real estate tax money. The right hand has to distribute it out. So to finish up your tax year, you have a tax sale. And then we have a trustee who the county has employed to handle everything the tax buyers don't buy.
For the tax sale, Fritz acts as the county's auctioneer. The first number he reads to the dozen or so buyers in the room is the parcel number, followed by the delinquent tax amount. Then the bidders jump in. They aren't bidding on the homes themselves, but interest for the taxes owed on them, from 18% down to zero.
02, 15, 01, 200, 008. The dollar amount, $276.97.
18,
10,
8. 9.
After the tax sale, property owners have 30 months to pay their overdue taxes with interest. If they don't pay by then, the buyer gets the deed to their property. Lawrence Bruckner travels to area tax sales and places dozens of bids. When he does, is Lee County.
I rationalize it in my mind is that the county needs the money. I mean, this money goes to help run the schools, helps run the situation. Really, this is the stick to get everybody to pay their taxes. But there has to be at the end, and unfortunately not in government enough, there has to be some accountability. And at the final analysis, after sending them three notices and giving them 6 months, the government has to say enough is enough.
Bruckner says on rare occasions he does get the deed to the property, which he just sells. In Lee County, nearly 2,000 certified letters were sent to delinquent taxpayers this year. In the month before the sale, many people finally paid, but 500 bills became part of this sale. Interestingly enough, this sale didn't include four parcels with delinquent taxes. They belonged to former Dixon Comptroller Rita Crundwell, accused of misappropriating millions of dollars from the city's coffers. Fritz notified buyers of what he called the Rita problem.
I have a court order that I cannot sell her property.
Those properties would have been lucrative. Part of the competitiveness is that national buyers come to these county sales around the country to bid. Bruckner says he's one of the little guys.
The problem here is that it's very competitive, and the interest rates can go from 18 to zero. And as you see, this pre-sale here today is going at 1, 2, and 3%. So you're getting about a 5, 6% return on your investment.
Treasurer Fritz says it's still a good investment if you can afford it.
You sure can't get that kind of money in the bank. So people that have money are tax buyers.
I'm Jenna Dooley.
15, 009, The dollar amount, $55.47.
17, 50, 12, 11, 9, 8.
Tesla Motors often makes headlines for its technology. Its new Model S, for instance, is the first entirely electric vehicle to be named Car of the Year by Automobile Magazine. But today, a judge in New York is taking up a lawsuit against the company that has nothing to do with engineering. It's about how they sell the cars. Stan Alcorn has this story for NPR.
Mark Seeger was in the Seattle area for work, and he was looking for a pair of shoes.
I was looking for a Banana Republic 50% off sale. You know, I had no intention of going into Tesla or buying a car that day.
But then he walked past Tesla Motors' Bellevue, Washington showroom. It's one of a handful of Tesla's company-owned stores. Within 5 minutes, he'd put down a deposit for an electric car that cost more than $50,000.
This is the most expensive impulse buy I've ever done.
Now, this isn't a typical sale for Tesla Motors, but according to car dealers in Massachusetts, if it had happened there, it would have been illegal. The issue is that Tesla sold the car through its own store instead of through a local dealership. Robert Okunewski is the executive vice president of the Massachusetts State Automobile Dealers Association, which is suing Tesla for opening a store in a local mall.
93B is the franchise law, is the auto dealer franchise law, which prohibits a manufacturer from owning and operating a dealership in Massachusetts.
To understand that law, you have to know how car sales typically work. A car manufacturer, Porsche, for example, builds a car. Then they ship it out to the local dealer, Manhattan Motor Cars, for example. Manny Quinones is a sale manager there.
Right, well, we're multi-brand, so we have brand-specific showrooms. Yeah, this showroom meets the Porsche standard.
Not having to do that gives Tesla an advantage that, according to Okunewski of the Dealers Association, is more than unfair.
Those dealers are investing millions of dollars in their franchises to make sure that they comply with their franchise agreements with the manufacturers. Tesla is choosing to ignore the law and is choosing to then try to play outside that system.
Tesla insists it isn't breaking the law in Massachusetts, New York, or anywhere else, but it is clearly trying to play outside the franchise dealer system. Jeremy Anwell is vice chairman of auto website Edmunds.com, and he thinks that's the real issue.
Let's say that consumers really liked buying from a factory store. That would put dealers in a tough spot, because they've been arguing for years that the franchise system is actually good for customers.
If customers prefer the Tesla model, the franchise system and the laws that prop it up could be in trouble.
So if you step back, why do we have these laws?
Well, you know, the dealers would argue, well, we made a big investment, so we deserve to be protected. But, you know, travel agents made big investments in their travel agency, and they didn't get any kind of protection.
Now, there are only a few thousand Teslas on the road. But if they become more mainstream, as they plan to, they could become a model for other manufacturers. And a lot will depend on how they're able to handle the things that dealers do now, like service. Mark Seeger, for one, isn't worried, because the Tesla is a simpler kind of car.
You know, an engine is very complex, lots of hoses and belts and pulleys and God knows what wires. The Tesla has a motor and a single-speed transmission and four wheels. That's kind of it.
Then again, he's still waiting in line to receive his first Tesla.
I'm number 11,100 and I believe 97 for the Model S.
And his second Tesla, the Model X, won't be out until 2014. Maybe by then the legal battles over Tesla showrooms will be resolved. For NPR News, I'm Stan Alcorn in New York.
WILL programming is made possible by Country Financial Representative Scott Jackson, Village at the Crossing in Champaign, committed to helping Central Illinois families achieve financial security and protect their home, family, and property since 1990. Online at scottjacksonfinancial.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 9th of November, 2012. It's the anniversary of Kristallnacht, the night in 1938 when German Nazis coordinated a nationwide attack on Jewish homes and businesses and synagogues. More than 1,000 synagogues were burned or destroyed, about 7,500 Jewish businesses looted, Jewish hospitals, homes, schools, cemeteries, vandalized. Before that night, the Nazis had killed people secretly and individually. And after Kristallnacht, the Nazis felt free to persecute the Jews openly because they knew that nobody would stop them. It's the birthday of the poet Anne Sexton, born Newton, Massachusetts, 1928. She said of her childhood, "I was locked in my room until the age of five. After that, at home or away from it, people seemed out of reach." She never went to college. She eloped when she was 19, became a housewife, had a nervous breakdown at the age of 28, tried to commit suicide, and her psychiatrist advised her to try writing poetry as therapy. She did, and the next year she took a poetry seminar with the poet Robert Lowell, who admired her work. And within a few years of having written her first poems, she had published in more than 40 magazines, The New Yorker, Harper's, and many others. For the rest of her life, Anne Sexton was in and out of mental hospitals, on and off psychiatric drugs. She said poetry was what kept her alive. She said, "My fans think I got well, but I didn't. I just became a poet." Her collection, Live or Die, won the Pulitzer Prize in 1966. She committed suicide in 1974. And it's the birthday of the astronomer Carl Sagan, Brooklyn, 1934, professor of astronomy at Cornell University, who at a time when most other astronomers were focusing on distant stars and other galaxies, Sagan focused his research on our own solar system. It was Carl Sagan who persuaded NASA to send the Viking and Voyager and Galileo planetary missions with cameras aboard to get close-up photographs of the outer planets and their moons. He was popular on television, appeared many times on Johnny Carson, and created the TV show Cosmos, the most popular scientific television program ever produced. Here's a poem for today by Thomas R. Smith, entitled Ode to the Vinyl Record. The needle lowers into the groove, and I'm home. It could be any record I've lived with and loved a long time, Springsteen or Rodrigo, Ray Charles or Emmylou Harris. Not only the music, but the whirlpool shimmering on the turntable, funneling blackly down into the ocean of the ear. Even the background pops and hisses, a worn record wraps the music in. Creaturely, imperfect.